my knowledge, it was not a NASA group of people making the original presentation called NASA Video Part 1. This was intended for the elimination of NASA personnel, but it was not NASA personnel doing it, is my impression. I wonder if you found the Part 2 where you saw them actually making the rotary machine work. And did you get the impression of what they're trying to do with this attraction, repulsion, high impedance, low impedance, coil, magnetic thing? KC2, QIQ, K2LIW, very good.
You know, one of the problems with generator motors is that there's a proportional problem with loading versus the amount of torque that's required. In other words, if you have a heavy load on an existing magnetic pole generator, you can literally stall the motor that's trying to turn the generator to get it going. What's interesting about these devices are that they basically will build up energy in a low-torque state and then be able to supply energy, and then the impedance builds up with velocity. So in other words, in order to build the power, it's really more of a velocity, a rotational velocity machine. I've actually seen these demonstrated in real life, and they work very, very interesting. But the application there is basically motors, low torque motors are really the application with very high velocity.
Now, if you happen to look at video number one, video part one, and then if you found video part two, where he's running this thing, I have the impression that he is generating primarily a motor. I don't think it was intended as a generator, but there I'm not sure. Do you think the primary purpose he was seeking is a motor or a generator or a combination? That's question number one. And when it comes to loading a magnetic machine, a machine that uses magnetism to create rotary motion, every machine has a certain stall torque. Depending on how fast it's turning, under what conditions it's turning, there's a certain amount of loading that you put on the machine where you will cause it to stall. And is he trying to change the stall characteristics? Is he trying to make a machine that is unstallable? What do you believe is his main motivation, Glenn? KC2QIQ, K2LIW?
A brand new idea. They've been around a while, but they've I've seen some very, very, improved devices used, since about 2005. And one of the interesting things about these particular generator motor devices are that they, if you put a load on the output, you can start them up with very, very low torque, and the power builds up with velocity. So in other words, it's not a torque-direct relationship to the standard generator motor that you're probably familiar with. And very, very interesting device. Now, unlike the standard motor where when you put the load on the output, if you say you short the output, you could use it like in a braking system to stop a car. That's how strong it is. This actually works the other way around. If you short the output, you can actually, after you unload the flywheel, it will actually pick up velocity until the energy is discharged. Pretty cool, huh? KC2QIQ.
Boy, that almost sounds like perplexual motion. Sounds too good to be true. I'm going to have to ask him more questions on that. However, where I see these motors for the last three, 4 years in a row, very fancy motors by my standards, are the brushless DC motors being used by the model aircraft enthusiasts. And you get 3,000 of these people all coming to one spot for three solid days at the NEAT Fair, Northeast Aero Technology, which is held in Hopkinsville, I think it is, New York. It's in the Catskill area of New York. And I've gone, it's every September, I've gone to a number of their sessions. When you see the kind of tremendous amounts of power, torque, efficiency, speed, and everything else that these guys are getting out of these brushless DC motors, great big ones, small ones, outracers, in-racers, large diameter, small diameter, extremely high speed, extremely low speed, high torque, they've got all kinds. From my point of view, those brushless DC motors are a kind of very high speed stepper motor. In other words, at what exact shaft position the motor is supposed to be at each instant of time, is dictated by the electronics. The electronics is getting feedback as to what is the current position. It knows when the motor is stalled. It knows what to do to get it out of stall. And so, where you said that if you load the motor, it's easy to make it run. I'm a little bit confused by that. Also, I'm also confused by when the motor is finally running at a high speed. You're telling me that as that, in the case of these brushless DC motors, you have a, let me pick a number, 12-pole neodymium magnet armature that is moving inside of a 13-pole electromagnetic stator. And you're stepping the voltage around the perimeter just right to force that motor, the armature, to be in a particular location at a particular time. You're stepping that magnetic field. And these things have got the capability of going to 50,000 RPM, producing tremendous torques, and whatever. If I shorted out one of those stator windings, that motor, I'm almost positive it's not going to speed up. So you're telling me if I short out some of the electromagnetic stator windings, when I've got this steady-state magnet multipole armature rotating inside, you're telling me it's going to speed up by shorting out any winding. I'm having trouble understanding what's going on there, John. It's not what I've observed, if you know what I mean. I said John, I meant Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2LIW.
Yeah, this is not your conventional motor. You basically have to throw out everything that you know about motors when you look at this and think more like your the other device, the static charge device that you, when you rotate it, works on a very similar principle. By basically using inductors, high impedance inductances, and the torque curve of this motor, basically, if you put a very, very heavy load on the output of this device, what will happen is it takes very, very little torque to get it started. So basically, you can start rotating the shaft very, very easily with low torque. It won't start building up power until you reach like a certain velocity curve. In other words, you'd have to get up to like say somewhere in the area of like 5,000 RPMs. At 5,000 RPMs, then you'll start developing power out of this particular motor. Now, one of the other interesting characteristics about this motor is there isn't a lot of torque. In other words, it doesn't take a lot of torque to get it to spin up initially on the primary winding. But what's interesting is that if you have a loaded condition on the motor and you release the torque drive for a period of time with a certain amount of velocity and just unload it, the output will start to drop from the feed, which is you'll actually see the velocity on the primary side starts spinning up momentarily until as the power depletes, and of course it'll just slow down on its own and go to zero. But there is a maximum, velocity on the primary where all the power is delivered. And if you unload it, if you remove the power from the stator, it will actually increase speed momentarily. KC2QIQ.
Question. Problem with your very first sentence, John. Glenn, your very first sentence is, if you start off with a motor with a very heavy loading, it starts up very easily. Wow. If my very heavy load happened to be a brake drum, and the brake shoes are engaged, and you're telling me with very light amount of torque, it's easy to spin up. I'm confused by that. You said, with very heavy loading on a motor shaft, it's easy to start it up with very low torque. Would you like to run that by again, K2LIW?
Yeah, remember, this is not a conventional motor. How this is working is very similar to the other machine that basically where you build up charge. It works in a very, very similar principle, but it's not alternating charge. It's alternating very, very high impedance inductance. So what's happening is because the coupling coefficient at low velocity, as you move these coils through the magnets in their position, there is very, very poor coupling at low velocity. Are you following me so far?
When you talked about that other machine when you build up voltage, is that a Wimhurst machine? What is that other machine where you build up voltage? I don't know what that means. But if I put a heavy load on the shaft of a motor, that means it's very difficult to turn the shaft. And you're telling me it takes very little torque to spin up a motor when it's heavily loaded. There's something in opposition there, John. Glenn. Oh, you, Glenn.
Okay, very similar to the Wilmhurst machine. This is not, remember, keep in mind, what they're discussing on this website is not your conventional motor. You're right, in a conventional motor, if you put a load on the output, you could stall, theoretically stall, or like stop like a braking action in a typical conventional motor. That's just the general torque characteristic of electric motors and how they work. This motor works on a different principle, very, very similar to the Wilmhurst machine, but not with charge, with inductance, with high impedance inductance with magnets. And the approach with that is that you wind up with an inverse effect, where basically to move the high impedance wire winding through the magnet at low speeds, what you'll realize is that there's very, very poor coupling at the low speeds because the voltages have not reached the point of coupling. In other words, there's a rectification curve that you have to meet, and this for minimum power. So if you're rotating at very, very slow speeds, there's really very little friction on the shaft. Do you follow?
If I'm waving a magnet, assume I've got an armature with a whole lot of individual magnets, and I'm now starting one magnet that's about to be waved in front of let's call it a high impedance coil. Lenz's law tells me the rate at which my neodymium magnet goes into the magnetic field of that coil. Lenz's law, I think it's Lenz's law, tells me the rate at which I build up voltage on that coil. Whether I bring that magnet close to that coil rapidly or slowly, I still obey Lenz's law if that coil has a high impedance on it. And you're telling me that if I move it rapidly or slowly, I get a different effect of Lenz's law? Over to you, Glenn.
No, it perfectly obeys Lenz's law. But let's think about this one for a minute. Let's say you have a coil, a high impedance coil, and it's just that. In other words, there's nothing attached to it. There's no loading on the other side. And you move your magnets past your coil. How much resistance do you think you're going to see?
The magnet doesn't know the coil is there. If it's a pure solenoid coil with no magnetic core itself, I'm just waving a magnet in front of a pure coil, and the coil is an open circuit, the magnet doesn't know the coil is there. Go ahead.
Okay, now I'm going to give you an abbreviated version of how this works, but this isn't exactly it, but I'm going to kind of put you on the right track. Now let's say if you put a capacitor, a very, very large capacitor on the other side, hundreds and hundreds of microfarads, and a diode on the other side, like a bridge rectifier, and you try to rotate that stator again to try to charge that magnet, you're going to feel a lot of resistance, right? Because that capacitor's starting it from 0 volts.
I agree. Because you cannot instantaneously change the voltage on a capacitor, at first the coil will think it is short-circuited as you're starting to bring the magnet. Assuming I'm bringing the magnet of the right polarity in the right direction of motion so that I'm forward biasing that diode, and the diode is trying to charge this very large capacitor, I now study that on the very first cycle, and I'll get almost the identical result whether I'm charging this huge capacitor or whether there's a perfect short circuit across the coil. In either case, as I try to bring in the magnet, the coil, literally by the current that flows in the coil, it creates a bucking magnetic field that is resisting, is creating the opposite polarity. In other words, if the end of the steady-state magnet that I'm trying to bring nearby happens to be negative, the coil will also be generating at that exact same end a negative magnetic polarity, and it will be creating repulsion. Over to you, Glenn.
Okay, so now let's say you've rotated this, you've rotated the stator initially, you got everything going. Now the rectifier has charged up the capacitor to some value. Maybe you've already rotated this thing to like 7,000 RPMs, and you wind up with, let's say, 100 volts on your capacitor. Now the capacitor is charged, and there's no load on it to discharge it. And you let go of the stator, and the motor's going to slow down, and it eventually will come to a stop, but you'll have 100 volts on the capacitor. So are you following me so far?
I've got you so far.
Now, if you try to accelerate that that stator again, you start to rotate it, do you think you're going to feel a lot of resistance on it again, like you did when you first started to charge up those capacitors? Because now the capacitor's already charged up at 100 volts.
the coil is back to the open circuit condition as long as the capacitor didn't discharge. So now, moving the magnet past that coil, the coil acts like it's an open circuit. There's no resistance. Go ahead.
Right on. Okay, so now what we could do is, you understand the principle of the high impedance circuit. So in other words, when you run magnetics past high impedance inductors, there's virtually no loading on the shaft.
I accept that. But you told me before you started over the shaft that's fully loaded, so I'm confused. Go ahead.
Okay, now, if I adjust a group of low impedance coils, okay, basically in a configuration that they're coupled to the high impedance coils, I'm making almost like a transformer effect. Do you follow me so far?
There's 10 different ways you could wire that. By the way, if I had a short-circuited coil, and I try to wave a magnet past that coil, and the magnet is producing the right amount of... It'll produce a magnetic field of a polarity that creates repulsion. And if there's enough mass to the flywheel of my armature, and it's got the magnet, it's waving it past the coil, I'll get repulsion as I'm approaching the coil. As I pass through the middle of the coil and then go out the other side, I'll continue to get repulsion, so that if I add together the repulsive energy on the way up the hill, so to speak, and then on the way down the hill, the net result is no net result of slowing of the shaft. The shaft will slow down on the uphill side, it'll speed up on the downhill side, and the net result is zero when I wave the magnet past the short-circuited coil. Over to you, John. Glenn.
You gotta let me finish my example, so I've got to do this in a couple of stages so you understand how this works, okay? But here's what's happening. So you understand the principle of once the impedance of the winding is high, there's very, very low resistance on the shaft. You're following me with that so far? Now all I've done is I've just added a low impedance coil, and I've directly coupled it with very good coupling between the low impedance coil to the high impedance coil. Okay, so in other words, now I have a very, very good, well coupled transformer. Are you following me so far?
Okay, similar to this diagram on this YouTube video, which is entitled the NASA Video Part 1, he's got two or three coils side by side. And I think in some cases they're wired together in some way that's not made.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Ignore the article for a minute and just listen to me for a little bit, because that'll confuse you.
Okay, your two coils are wired together how? Are they mechanically sitting side by side? Are they in parallel?
Coupled like transformers now. So in other words, you have a high impedance coil, and now you've got a secondary winding that's perfectly coupled to it, so that basically you'd have perfect voltage coupling between the high impedance to the low impedance. So in other words, you'd have a high current, low voltage winding, very, very well coupled to that high impedance.
Okay, let's go back and define terms. Is a high impedance winding one that has a lot of turns, and it's got a very high impedance load to it? Is a low impedance winding one that has very few turns? And if I take the low impedance winding, put it to the primary of a transformer with few turns, take the high impedance winding, put it to the secondary of a transformer with high turns, I've now got a kind of impedance match between the two. What is the transformer doing as opposed to using a pair of high impedances connected or a pair of low impedance connected? Go ahead.
Well, right now, we haven't connected a load yet. We're just talking about a lot of turns on one winding and very, very low turns on the other winding. So basically, we have a high voltage being developed across a high voltage winding, and that's coupled to a low turns winding that's capable, if it has a load on it, but we didn't talk about a load yet, could deliver a much higher current.
The high impedance winding and the low impedance winding, are they connected together by way of an ideal transformer? And is the transformer trying to match the impedances? Over to you.
Yes, they're directly coupled to each other, but they're completely galvanically isolated. And if we put a load on the other side, it would be a much lower voltage. But are you following the picture of the transformer coupling now?
Yes, but what's the advantage of using the transformer as opposed to having a pair of equal impedance windings connected to each other? What is the transformer buying for you? Go ahead.
Okay, let's discuss the principles first, and then I'll get to it. Now, put a short circuit on that low impedance winding. Now, what happens to the torque if you try to turn that stator? Is that going to be easy? easy to turn or hard to turn?
If there's a short circuit on the low impedance winding, as the magnet approaches it, I will get resistance. As the magnet recedes, I will get an increase in energy, if you know what I mean. I'm going up a hill and down a hill. Go ahead.
That's right, because the coupling between the two windings is very good, right? Are you following that so far? Because the voltage coupling between the two windings is very good, and when you short that winding, it's going to put a lot of resistance on that primary stator.
We jumped ahead here. Right now, you ask me what happens if I've got a single coil of low impedance with a short circuit, and I try bringing a magnet nearby. And I described an uphill clock.
Stop for a minute, Dick. They're coupled like a transformer. The magnet is going by the high impedance coil.
Does the magnet ever go by the low impedance coil?
Only by its coupling to the high impedance inductor. So it could be winded. So it would probably be in the near proximity of it.
Does the magnetic field of the high impedance winding all by itself ever intercept the magnetic field of the low impedance winding? Or is the only coupling between the two the neodymium magnet that's waved between the two? Over to you, Glenn.
It's part of the same magnetic structure, but are you following the picture so far that basically right now the high impedance winding is a high impedance winding with a lot of turns on it, and then you have the low impedance winding on the other side that's basically just coupled to it. And the magnetic field, yes, is shared because the coupling in this definition right now, which we were saying, is a very, very good coupling.
You keep using the word coupling, and it's got three definitions in this situation, and you haven't defined which one. It's clear in your head, but you haven't told the outside world.
Voltage coupling. Voltage in terms of Lenz law. The volts per turn for each winding is directly proportional to the turns ratio.
But there's a transformer involved. You've got the high impedance winding of a transformer connected to the high impedance coil. You got the low
ratio is 10 to 1. Basically, 10 volts on one winding is equal to exactly 1 volt on the other winding. That's the coupling.
The coupling you're talking is by way of the transformer connecting the two coils?
Transformer coupling. Transformer coupling, perfect coupling, 10 to 1.
Is the transformer coupling the fact that the two coils are side by side, or is there a third component called transformer in the circuit? Up till now, I thought there's a third component. Over to you, Glenn.
It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. We're defining the coupling. We're saying that the voltage coupling from one winding to the other is a ratio of 10 to 1 of voltage. So if you had 10 volts on one winding, you would have 1 volt on the other winding.
If the windings are in parallel with each other, how do you get different voltages at the same instant of time on the two windings?
Because of the turns ratio.
If the high turns ratio winding is directly connected to the low turns ratio winding of the adjacent coil, how in the world can I get more voltage on one winding than the other winding when they're directly connected to each other?
They're sharing the same magnetic field.
If I measure the voltage across the high winding, high impedance winding, and I measure 10 volts, and it's directly connected across the adjacent winding, which is a low impedance winding, doesn't the voltmeter across the second winding, the low impedance winding, must it also read 10 volts, but connected directly in parallel?
Neither winding has a load on it. So what we're saying right now is that one has less turns than the other. So what we're saying is that one winding now has got basically a larger number of turns than the other one. So because it has less turns in the same magnetic path, it has less voltage on that winding.
Are the windings directly connected in parallel with each other?
Through a magnetic path length, yes.
So the windings are not adhered to each other, they're only magnetically coupled to each other.
Magnetically coupled, sharing the same magnetic path length. The voltage is directly coupled.
There's five ambiguous words being used here, Glenn, and it's not clear.
Coupling is a voltage coefficient. It's basically turns ratio being shared. So if the coupling is one, a unit of one, the volts per turn, if I've got 10 turns, 1 volt per turn on one, and I've only got one turn on the other, it's only got 1 volt. So the coupling is one, but they're sharing the same magnetic path length, but they're not electrically connected to each other.
So at the beginning of this experiment, the high impedance winding is connected to nothing but air. The low impedance winding is connected to nothing but air. The two windings are side by side, and we're about to wave a magnet in front of the two of them. Is that the scene?
Completely open circuit.
Okay. You kept saying they're coupled to each other, and that meant magnetically, electronically coupled, soldered together. You don't mean that. You meant only magnetically coupled. Each is an open circuit winding. You didn't say that. Okay, proceed.
Okay, so now what I can do with these two windings are I can start loading them. So now I put a load, an equivalent power load, on both of the windings. So let's say if I have a high voltage, high impedance resistance on one winding, and I put a lower resistance impedance on the lower impedance winding. Now I start to turn that stator, and you're going to feel resistance starting from low RPM. Do you follow?
Okay, let's boil it down to a specific. I put a 1,000 ohm resistor across the high impedance winding. I put a 10 ohm resistor across the low impedance winding. And now I wave a magnet between the two. Go ahead.
Okay, so what we're seeing here is that there's resistance basically proportional to the loading factor on the coil with respect to the magnet. Are we following each other on that so far?
As I wave my magnet in front of the high impedance winding, I couple energy into the 1K resistor, assuming it's the right impedance match. As I wave my magnet across the low impedance winding, I couple voltage into the 10 ohm resistor. Which resistor gets hotter? Go ahead.
If they're sized proportionally for the same power, they should be the same power dissipation.
Okay, I think I accept that. So you're telling me if I get the exact same power dissipation, the same amount of heat in each resistor, therefore as I wave the magnet in front of each, I must feel the exact same amount of resistance to the motion of the magnet, because that's where the energy to heat the resistors is coming from. Go ahead.
Okay, so now, if I were to take the low impedance magnet and start moving it out of the magnetic field, it's still coupled to the, it's still sharing some of the magnetic path of the high impedance winding, but now it's being moved away from the magnetic field, so it doesn't share as much of the magnetic path length anymore. So now the voltage coupling is no longer one. Let's make it worse. Let's make it half worse, so that the voltage coefficient now is 0.5. So instead of it coupling 1 volt per turn, now the low impedance winding only is accepting half a volt per turn.
I'm assuming, according to the YouTube that we saw, the two windings are high impedance.
To get the YouTube article, follow me first, then, if you're ever going to follow this.
Okay. You seem to be having the magnet sit still and you're moving the coil. They had the coil sit still and they move the magnet. Since it's a relative situation, does that matter?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, so you're going to wave your two coils. Your two coils are mechanically bound together with an insulated structure, and you're going to wave them across a magnet. Is that true?
That's it.
Okay. You've got a 1K resistor across the high impedance winding, you've got a 10 ohm resistor across the low impedance winding, and you're going to wave these two across the magnet, and now you're going to change the experiment some way. Go ahead.
I'm going to make the voltage coupling to the low impedance winding worse by one half. I'm going to start moving it out of the magnetic path length a bit, not completely out of the path length, but just enough to kill the voltage coupling by a ratio of 0.5. So now my voltage coefficient on the low impedance winding is no longer 1 to 1, 1 volt per turn. Now it's a half volt per turn. So my voltage coefficient now is 0.5. Do you follow?
Five ambiguous words there. Assume now that my two coils are parallel to each other. The high impedance coil and low impedance coil started off parallel to each other. On the first experiment, I waved them across a single magnet. Now you want to change the coupling coefficient of the low impedance winding. You didn't say how. Are they no longer parallel? Did you stagger one versus the other so the low impedance winding is now further away from the magnet when the pair is being waved across the magnet? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. We're moving that other, we're staggering the other, the low impedance or the lower turns winding a little bit further away from the magnetic path. So that now its voltage coupling is no longer tightly coupled to the high impedance winding. So now it's not exactly 1-to-1 anymore, it's 0.5.
You said you moved them away from the magnetic path. Does that mean you staggered? Assume the magnet's on the left-hand side and the two coils are on the right-hand side. They started off parallel. You now staggered the high impedance, the low impedance coil, the lower coil, you staggered it to the right so that when you wave them vertically across this magnet, the low impedance winding has a lower coupling coefficient than the high impedance winding. And they're both connected to their 1,000 ohm resistor and 10 ohm resistor. Is that true?
That's correct. Now, what will happen to the power? The power on the higher impedance winding will be the same, but the power on the other winding will drop by the square. In other words, because now the voltage has dropped by 0.5, basically it's 1/2. Now it's actually 1/4 of the power in that winding. Do you follow?
I've got that, and therefore the resistor is going to be 1/4 as hot. Go right ahead.
Now, what about the impedance it's going to take to turn? In other words, how much resistance do you think you're going to start feeling? It will ease up on the stator? Will the stator be a little bit easier to turn?
As the stator, which is these two coils, wave past my single magnet, I feel very little resistance when it waves by the low impedance magnet with the greater spacing. I feel the normal amount of resistance as it waves past the high impedance magnet, which is closer. Go right ahead.
Exactly. So the worse the coupling is to the low impedance coil, the less effect it's going to have on the primary stator. You see that?
I agree. And if I took the two magnets while they were parallel and moved both of them further away in distance as I wave them past the magnet, wouldn't I get a similar effect? Go ahead.
It's also correct. But we're not only going to move the low impedance winding. We're not going to move the high impedance winding.
I've got that. Please proceed.
But now here's the kicker. The power drops off by a factor of 4. Right? In other words, it's 1/4 the power as opposed to 1 in the windings, just by moving it to half the voltage coefficient. Just because, in other words, we've killed the coupling. But what's important to notice here is what about the currents in the winding? The currents are still the same. The currents have not changed. The current in the primary winding is the same, and the current in the secondary winding is the same. It's only the voltage that's lowered.
If I lower the voltage going into a 10 ohm resistor to 1/2 the voltage, why isn't the current going into the 10 ohm resistor half the current?
The unfortunate problem is I forgot to mention that we have to lower the resistance also to maintain, because the voltage is lowered. We can maintain the same current in that winding because of the coupling ratio, because there's a current coupling between the windings that's remaining exactly the same. But what's actually changing is just the voltage coefficient.
Okay. If I move the coil further away, the low impedance coil, so it develops half the voltage, but if now I half the resistance, assuming the magnetic fields don't do something funny, I've now got the same amount of current, half the voltage, half the power. I believe I'm going to feel half the physical resistance as I wave the magnet past that winding. Go ahead.
Precisely. Now we can move it even further away. Let's make the coupling, the voltage coupling coefficient really bad. Let's make it like 0.1. So that now you only get 1/10 of the coupling, voltage coupling, between those two windings, because we've moved the low impedance winding even further and further away. So in other words, we still have the same current capability according to Lenz's law, but the voltage coefficient that's capable in the coupling is much, much lower. Are you following me so far there? And we can lower the resistance on low impedance winding even lower.
The total amount of energy that I put inside of the coil by way of the steady state magnet that gets waved in front of it is the amount of energy potential that that coil has. As I physically move the coil further and further away from the magnet, the total amount of magnetic field that gets into that coil is a lower number. The total amount of energy that I'm putting into that coil is a lower number. Even though I may create a perfect impedance match, I've got less output energy into that resistor. Over to you, Glenn.
That's correct, because the voltage coefficient is what's dropping off. But now I can really move that coil, that low impedance coil, far enough away so that my impedance actually looks like a short circuit on that winding, to the point that the voltage coefficient is near zero, but I can still supply the same current as if the voltage was coupled with a 10-ohm resistor with a perfect coupling, voltage coefficient coupling of 1. Do you follow that?
We got to be careful now. As I move that coil further and further from the magnet, when I wave it past the magnet, the total amount of magnetic energy I'm putting into the coil is approaching zero. Why do you want to go there?
Demonstrate something. I can still keep the current ratio between the two windings. So in other words, the turns ratio between the high impedance winding and the low impedance winding, the current ratio is always maintained. But the voltage coefficient is what's dropping off, so that the power is dropping to the point where I can almost still have full current with almost nearly zero voltage on that low impedance winding. Are you following me so far?
Because the high impedance winding had a 1K resistor, the current in the very first experiment was very low. It was probably 100 times lower than the low impedance winding into the 10-ohm resistor. I now can make the current into the 10-ohm resistor, which I'm lowering to 1 ohm, to 10 ohm, 0.1 ohm, and so on. For a period of time, I can make the current into the low impedance winding approach the current of the high impedance winding, very low, and as I move it further and further away, the total energy is approaching zero. Eventually, there's no current flowing in the low impedance winding at all, even with a dead short circuit. Go ahead.
But there's a point to where you can have current inside that winding that still matches the turns ratio, just a very, very low voltage that's only just enough to maintain the current turns ratio between the two windings.
I'm not changing the turns ratio. The high impedance winding had 1,000 turns. The low impedance winding had 10 turns. Are we rewinding these coils, Glenn? Go ahead.
Nope. What I'm pointing out to you is, let's even forget the magnet for a minute. Let's just talk about a transformer. I think we got to back up a step here because I think there's something you're missing. In a transformer, if I have a very, very well-coupled transformer, I can have, a 1-to-1, exact 1-to-1 ratio, where one side of the transformer's got 10 turns, the other side of the transformer's got 10 turns. And I put 1 amp of current in the primary winding. As long as I have the correct resistance on the other side, I should have 1 amp of current in the other winding. And the voltage on both sides, if the coupling is voltage coupling is 1, the voltage and the current will be equal on both sides of that transformer. That would be a 100% efficient transformer. Do you follow?
I got you so far. Go ahead.
Now let's kill some of that voltage coupling. We'll make the we'll actually start moving some of that core material out of the transformer and make the coupling bad, the voltage coupling. What will happen is the turns ratio with respect to current will remain the same. The voltage coefficient is what's going to change. So in other words, if I have 1 amp of current in a primary winding with, say, 10 volts, I'll have the same 1 amp of current in the secondary winding, still maintaining Lenz's law, but now the voltage coefficient will be by 0.5, so the voltage will only be 5 volts on the other winding, but the current ratio from each winding will still be the same, 1-to-1.
I think you're changing the load impedance on that secondary winding as you decrease the magnetic coupling coefficient.
But it doesn't matter. Think about it for a minute. It doesn't matter what the whatever the loading resistance is on the primary and the secondary is going to affect the current in the primary and secondary. It'll always be the same.
Let's run this by again. Assume I've got, at first, a 10-turn primary, 10-turn secondary, a particular load resistor on the secondary, and the current in the primary and the current in the secondary are the same. I now decrease the magnetic coupling.
Voltage coupling.
Say again?
Voltage coupling. The magnetic path is still the same.
What did you change on the transformer?
Period. We moved some of the magnetic path length. We're moving the other winding out of the magnet. They're not sharing as much magnetic path length.
Okay. Does that mean you're raising or lowering the mutual impedance between primary and secondary?
Let's not get into that for a minute, because that's going to be self-evident in a minute. What I'm pointing out to you is that if I start destroying the voltage coefficient by removing some magnetic material away from the two coupled windings, what's going to happen is the voltage coupling is going to drop. So what will happen is I can have 10 volts on the primary winding, only 5 volts on the secondary winding, but whatever the resistance is on the secondary is going to determine the current. So let's say if it's a 1-ohm resistor, 5 volts, that means 5 amps. I'm going to have 5 amps of current on the primary winding, but it's going to be at 10 volts. Do you follow?
I do, and this is exactly what they do with the transformer in the magnetron of a microwave oven to make it a constant current source, so the magnetron gives you the best power output across the 60-cycle non-rectified voltage going into it. Go ahead.
Okay, so I can even make the coupling coefficient even worse in that transformer. I can make it 0.1. So now I've got 10 volts on the... remember, the turns ratio is still 1 to 1, okay? But the voltage coupling coefficient is rotten now. So in other words, now they're not sharing very much coupling path length between the two, magnetic path length, but now they're moved far enough apart so that only one-tenth of the voltage makes it onto the other winding. But they're still 1-to-1. They're both 10-turn windings, but the voltage has dropped to 1/10, or only 1 volt, on the other winding. But if you measure the current in the primary and you measure the current in the secondary, they're still the same, 1-to-1.
While you're changing the magnetic coupling coefficient between primary and secondary, and you're trying to maintain the same amount of current in primary winding and secondary winding, are you changing the load resistance on the secondary?
Don't have to. If I keep the load resistance the same on the secondary, I make the magnetic path length between the two share less lines of magnetic flux, the voltage coefficient is going to drop off tremendously. The voltage will drop, but the current relationship from both windings, because the number of turns has remained the same, will still be 1-to-1. So in other words, even though, let's say it started off with a certain resistor at 5 amps, I move it away to now that the voltage coefficient has dropped down to 0.1, and now it's only 1/10 the voltage, so I'm going to wind up with that much lower current. But if I take a current probe and measure the current on the secondary winding, it will still be the same current on the primary winding.
You said no, and the answer has got to be yes. Are you, as you're moving the secondary winding further away, are you changing the load resistance on the secondary, yes or no?
Let's say we are, okay, and so the current is constant in every time we're doing it. But do you agree that even though the voltage is going lower, we're maintaining the same current, but if you measure the current in both windings, it's always going to be the same?
It's not always going to be the same unless you very carefully adjust the load resistance on the secondary. If not, if a lower resistance is giving the same current across the load resistor of the secondary, you would be violating Ohm's law. You must be lowering the resistance in order to force it to be the same. It's not always the same unless you force it to be the same by changing the load resistance. You didn't make that clear. How about you, Glenn?
Okay, I'm not expressing myself properly here. I got to say this one more time. Let's say we don't change the resistor, so that each time we make the voltage coefficient worse, and we're moving that coil further and further away, we're moving them further and further away from each other, and so the coefficient is dropping from a perfect 1 to 1/10. Now the current has dropped by that amount, but if I measure the ratio of current from one winding to the other winding, it will be exactly the same. The voltage may have dropped on one winding, but the voltage will still be maintained on the primary, but it will still be the same current in both windings.
You're telling me that the secondary winding, as you move it away, goes to a lower voltage, but the current is going to stay the same without changing the load resistor. You're telling me the load resistor is about to violate Ohm's law. Over to you.
No, that's not what I'm saying. That's what you're hearing, but that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that, yes, the current is dropping, okay, but what I'm trying to point out is that the current in the primary winding is dropping as well.
Okay. Are you telling me that the transformer made out of good materials is going to continue to have approximately the same primary to secondary efficiency? Over to you.
No, the efficiency is going to follow the voltage coefficient directly. So in other words, if the voltage coupling went to one-tenth, that means that it's got rotten efficiency. It's only 10% efficient, the transformer, right now. But what's happened is the current ratio is still the same. So even though the efficiency of the transformer is dropping and the voltage coefficient from one winding is dropping in the other winding, the current ratio is still maintained.
You told me the efficiency is dropping, but you're keeping the primary voltage and the primary current constant.
No. The current in the primary is going to follow the turns ratio of the secondary. So if we leave the resistance the same, the current in the primary is going to drop along with the secondary current.
If the current in the primary is dropping, then you're putting in less power. Why can't the efficiency stay close to the same?
Because in the first instance, let's say if we had 10 volts and 1 ampere, just as a number, so it's a nice even number, like 10 watts. And basically what's happening is on the secondary side, I've got basically 10 volts and 1 ampere, because the voltage coupling now is 1, so it's a perfect 10 watts. As I start moving the ratio of current to voltage, the voltage to current ratio is linear, but the power is following the square, so the efficiency is going to drop off horribly as you move the voltage coefficient away.
Okay, you're decoupling the primary to the secondary magnetically, and you are or are not changing the impedance of the secondary. You either do or don't want the primary and secondary currents to be equal. What is your motivation? What are you trying to do here?
The primary and the secondary currents will always be equal. That's what I'm pointing out. The voltage coefficient will drop off on the secondary winding, but the primary currents and the secondary currents will always equal each other.
The primary and secondary currents will always equal each other if you do what? You haven't finished that sentence.
You don't have to do anything. There was, if the secondary current drops, the primary current drops, but they will always be the same ratio. If the two windings are both 10 turns, they're always going to be 1-to-1. But the voltage, as you move them apart, will drop because the coupling is bad.
Okay. So you're making a transformer that has more and more magnetic loss between primary and secondary. The magnetic field of the primary, all of those lines are no longer linking all of the turns of the secondary. The coupling coefficient is going down. Secondary voltage decreases. Primary current decreases. Power input and power output keeps the same ratio and both drop. What's your motivation?
If I make the voltage coefficient bad enough, I can actually have a current in my secondary winding and a current in my primary winding that are equal, okay? But I basically have no power in the secondary winding, but I have power in the primary winding. Can you see that?
The only way you can have no power in the secondary winding is because you eventually move to a short circuit. Assuming you've got real good wire that has no resistance, eventually the load on the secondary is a short circuit. And although you've decreased the magnetic coupling by moving things away, you can make the primary current and the secondary current equal. The primary current becomes purely inductive. It's got a 90-degree phase angle to it. It's got a power factor of zero. And now you've got a transformer that's drawing primary current and secondary current, but its power factor has gone to zero. Why do you want to go there?
Okay, now I'm going to take it one step further. Now let's make the turns ratio different. so I can make a current multiplier. So now we know that obviously the current ratio always stays the same regardless of voltage coupling. So in other words, the currents are always going to equal the turns ratio. The voltage may not equal the turns ratio, but the current will always follow the turns ratio. So if I take the number of turns off in the secondary winding, I can make very, very high currents with very, very low voltages on a secondary winding, close to a short circuit. Do you follow that?
You said the current will follow the turns ratio. Did you mean to say the current will follow the inverse of the turns ratio? Go ahead.
That's correct, depending on which side you're calling primary and which side you're calling secondary. But that's right. In this particular case, it would be the inverse, and we have a very, very high current on a low turn winding and a relatively lower current on the high turns winding.
Okay. By making the turns ratio on the secondary...
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Develop very, very high currents in a winding, and then basically have a... If I try to turn the stator of this magnetically coupled device, where I take all of these windings, now instead of having one winding, let's take 12 of them, and we'll wrap them around a circle, and we'll put the magnets now on the stator. So now we're going to start rotating magnets around, let's say, 12 fixed coils that are all set up like transformers. Are you following me so far?
You've used a bunch of words, but you haven't drawn a picture. I've got 12 coils. Are they all weakly magnetically coupled to something that's not defined? By the way, I can get current magnification as I do with a soldering gun, even though I've got very tight coupling between primary and secondary. I can still get beautiful current magnification, like 1,000 to 1. I get very little voltage out of the secondary, but I still get a beautiful amount of power transfer, and I make that soldering gun very hot. Why do I have to decrease the magnetic field if I'm trying to get current magnification? Go ahead.
I only use this as a demonstration, not a practical example. I'm trying to demonstrate the points between voltage coupling and current in a turns ratio. You can have a turns ratio so that the current is always maintained. It's only the voltage that will sag when the coupling gets bad. Do you follow that for that principle?
Only if you're willing to readjust the load resistance while you do that. Go ahead. Or change the turns ratio while you do that.
No, I'm basically telling you that you can take a transformer, any transformer out of a box, anywhere at any time, and you can measure it. Let's say if the turns ratio is 1 to 1, and you can put a voltage on a primary winding, measure the voltage on the secondary winding. Almost always, unless that transformer was 100% efficient, that the secondary winding, when loaded, is always going to be a lower voltage by some magnitude than the primary winding, either due to resistances, coupling problems, etc., etc. It's going to be a lower voltage on the secondary winding. I'm sure you can see that. But the current will always, if you put a current probe on the primary winding and the secondary winding, and you measure them, they will always directly follow the turns ratio. There's no coupling issues with current and turns ratio. It will always match the turns weight ratio relationship. The voltage coupling will not.
You're violating Ohm's law if I have a real load resistor on that secondary. If the secondary is giving me a lower voltage than the primary, and both have the exact same turns ratio, and I've got less voltage on the secondary, and yet the current in primary and secondary is the same, that seems to be what you're saying. Let me think about that.
That's why the efficiency of the transformer is lower. You've got power losses in the transformer.
You keep saying that the current is identical to the turns ratio. Do you mean it's identical to the inverse of the turns ratio?
Okay. If you draw the equation for turns ratio and you look at current and you look at the relationship of turns, of ampere turns, if you have bad voltage coupling, if your turn is always maintained regardless of the voltage coupling, do you follow that?
Ampere turns is proportional to the amount of magnetic field that's changing in that winding. If the transformer is not ideal, the magnetic field of the primary and the magnetic field going to the secondary are not the same. Over to you.
Absolutely not. Unequivocally, 100% not. If you look at very, very carefully at all of your magnetic equations, something that becomes very, very obvious is that when you take turns ratio in a transformer, the one thing that is always maintained with turns ratio is not voltage, it's current. So in other words, you can have a poorly magnetically coupled structure, and the turns ratio will always be maintained to current. So in other words, if you have one-to-one turns in a transformer, the current in one winding will always equal the current in the other winding, regardless of the voltage coupling. That's why if you always notice the wording that I use, voltage coupling. Coupling only affects voltage. It does not affect current in windings. So if you have the turns ratio of a transformer, it'll be close to the turns ratio of volt turns, but there's also the issue of coupling, which is going to affect the voltage between the two windings. But the current is not affected by coupling. KC2, Q, like you.
Now, there's an exception here, Glenn. Every realistic transformer you and I have used, the manufacturer had to choose some reasonable amount of turns to the primary. He chooses the turns to the primary to set up a certain amount of primary inductance so that when the transformer is unloaded, the current flowing to the primary is some reasonably low number.
Well, load current, yes. Load current is always continuous to the turns ratio. What you're talking about is magnetization current. I can because we're talking about ideal transformers, I can make the primary inductance infinity. So I just fixed that problem right there.
Okay. If I take the ridiculous extreme, and if there is no magnetization current in your ideal transformer, and I take, assume my secondary winding is wound on a magnetic, my primary winding is wound on a magnetic structure, my secondary winding is on a magnetic structure. At first, I slap those two structures against each other so they share the same magnetic field. Then I start producing a gap between the two. Eventually, I move them a long distance away. You're telling me the primary current and the secondary current will drop at the exact same rate as I separate them. I think that's what you're saying, Glenn. Go ahead.
Absolutely, they will, and they will always be equal. But the voltages won't. If you measure the voltage on the primary and the voltage on the secondary, they will be, the difference will be the voltage coefficient, KC2, QIQ.
But if your transformer is ideal, the total amount of real watts, not volt amperes, real watts I put into the primary and real watts I get out of the secondary of your ideal transformer, they have to equal each other. Therefore, even though the current stays the same, the power factor on the primary starts going towards zero. Go ahead.
Not necessarily. I can have power loss in my transformer due to voltage coefficient. So in other words, I can have a winding with virtually an infinite number of turns, and then basically just with just, you know, resistance in the wire. So in other words, I can make the inductance extremely high, just an air wound coil with, you know, tons and tons of turns. And I can do the same thing with the secondary winding. And I can overlap them and make the voltage coefficient near one so that the voltage and the current in both of the windings, one to one, is identical. Now I start moving those two coils apart. What's going to happen is if I put a current probe on one and I put a current probe on the other, I will always notice that the current ratio will always be maintained, one to one. So if the current is dropping because it's a resistor on the secondary side, the current in the primary is going to equal the current in the secondary. Load current will always be the same. But what you'll notice is the voltage will start dropping on the secondary winding as you start moving it away.
Glenn, up till now you've been telling me the transformer is made out of ideal materials. Now you're telling me there's a resistance in the
There is a real material. It's ideal.
You're now telling me there's resistance in the primary winding. You're flipping back and forth between ideal materials and non-ideal materials. Let's stay with ideal materials. If I've got a primary winding with no resistance, a secondary winding with no resistance, primary and secondary are both wound on a magnetic structure, and I'm starting to separate the structures. I say the total energy in real watts going into the primary and the total energy coming out of the secondary must equal each other. Even though the voltage on the secondary is dropping and the voltage on the primary is not dropping, the power into the primary is decreasing because of power factor. You agree or disagree?
In the